Good morning. Welcome to Senate Judiciary Committee. Today's Thursday, April 6, 2006. Now 8:36 a.m. Present Senator Guest, Senator Huggins, Senator French, myself, Senator Seekins. We're going to start this morning with House Bill 318, Limitation on Eminent Domain. Morning, gentlemen.
Morning, sir. Good to see you again.
See you again. If you'll put your names on the record for us.
For the record, my name is Craig Johnson. I am staff to the sponsor, Representative Lisa McGuire.
Peter Putz here with the Alaska Department of Law.
Okay. When last we were looking at this bill, we were looking at, and we're still working on, version X-ray.alpha. Senator Terrio is also with us this morning. And we were looking, we were working on X-ray.alpha. We adopted a couple amendments. I believe we adopted
one and three.
You recall?
One and four, I believe.
One and four.
You mean on the previous amendments?
Yes.
We adopted one and three. I know.
And could we just go through, because unfortunately I have some unnumbered amendment copies. Maybe we could just go through, since we're going to be amending amendments, or at least proposing that, it looks like today. Number them all, and just maybe the clerk could tell us the number of the amendment in sort of a short title or a couple words.
Or just not the short title. We just need the X dot whatever.
Yep, that'd be great.
Yeah. Just so we don't get ourselves confused. Did you get that for us, Madam
Clerk? Amendment one is XA.3.
Okay.
Please. Number two was withdrawn.
Thank you, ma'am.
And XA.8 wasn't offered, correct? Let's hand it out. I don't think it was offered.
I don't have any.
Okay, great.
All right.
And just one other procedure.
Senator French.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We've never done a CS, so XA.3 and XA.5 are still separate from the bill.
Yes.
They're not incorporated into the bill.
There's not been a CS after we started amending it. That is correct. Okay. So XA.3, which was amendment number one, was adopted.
Yes.
XA.4, which was amendment number two, was withdrawn. XA.5, which was amendment number three, was adopted. XA.14 was amendment number four and was adopted.
I
XA.13 was amendment number five and was adopted. XA.12 was amendment number six and was adopted. Craig, you want to start us out on today?
If that would please the chair, yes, sir. After we had a meeting, we had some loose ends to tie up, and so what I have, I think in your packets, are proposed amendments, and I don't know how you would like to handle it. I think if, maybe for simplicity, if we started with XA.16, so that we can kind of keep them in some type of sequential order, might be appropriate.
Okay, let's take a look at that. XA.16, let's take a look at XA.16.
It's over a memo by drafter Don Bullock of Ledge Council.
Let me see, I do have a memorandum. Go ahead.
And basically, amendment, and if you want to, I don't know if you want to adopt each of these amendments for discussion, or just go through them and decide, I kind of broke them out individually. A lot of them are fairly technical fixes until we get a little further back into the later amendments.
And what we've done is, here's, with this amendment, as it looks like to me, is we're changing personal residence basically to privately owned residence. And it appears, actually, the personal residence appears three times on page four of the bill.
Correct, yes, sir.
On lines 12, 13, and 21. If we want an amendment to change personal residence to privately owned residence to match the term used in the legislative intent in the finding section of the bill, we'd have to amend those other sections of the bill.
That is correct.
So.
And, Mr. Chairman, I don't think there's any problem. I think they could be interchangeable. I don't think we have any problems with the definitions of that. If you wanted to just amend to replace that in each of those situations, that would not.
Mr. Putzier, how would that fit on definitions?
Yeah, we have a definition of it.
Well, it's currently defined, personal residence is already defined. So it would be better to, and I think Mr. Bullock's point was to be consistent in the terminology. So if we do change it in the intent, then we might have to, you know, ideally go and change it in the body of the bill. But as I noted, we have defined personal residence at page four, and so long as we're comfortable with that definition, I don't necessarily see a pressing need to change the intent language.
Mr. Chair?
Go ahead.
Is there a reason that we didn't just delete landowners? So personal residence was the same way all the way through? I'm sorry, I forgot the reason why we were changing it from landowners personal to privately owned residence, given that personal residence is used throughout the bill.
No, I don't recall either off the top of my head. What was the discussion, Craig, do you remember?
This was in our conversation we had in your office, and I think it was, I think it was more of a preference. I don't know that there was any real driving force to it, but we wanted to bring it forward to, at the request of that meeting, the outcome of that meeting.
Okay, we haven't forwarded this amendment yet. We're just talking about it, so let's just set this one aside for a moment.
Okay.
Then the next amendment, which is XA.17, is purely a technical fix. Probably an oversight on my part when I sent it over to the drafter, that is new language in the bill, so it should have been highlighted. That is strictly a technical fix.
Let's call that amendment number seven. And the chair will.
I'll move amendment number seven.
Senator Huggins has moved amendment number seven. Is there objection? Seeing none, amendment number seven is adopted.
Thank you, sir.
Amendment is XA.18.
The next is.
17.
And seven?
17 was the one you just adopted, yes, sir.
XA.17.
17, yeah.
XA.18 reflects the concerns of the committee about properties held in trust, that they should rise to the same level as an individual who owns the property and someone who's living in a trust property. This language inserts, I'm sorry, no, this does two things. In two places, it inserts the beneficiary as being protected from eminent domain for personal use.
So on page 4, line 23, for an example, after owner, it would insert, or by the beneficiary of a trust holding legal title to the structure. On page 4, line 25, must be inhabited by the owner, by the prior owner, or beneficiary of a trust holding legal title to the structure. So we're basically saying if it has been, in the last 12 months, it's been occupied by an owner, including a beneficiary or owner of a trust, then it has carries this, rather than having a 90-day window that's open after the sale and the new purchaser is at risk.
And for clarification, when I did speak to some real estate professionals, there is nothing that assures that disclosure in the disclosure statement today. Okay. So there's nothing that guarantees that that has to be done. So I think this is very a sound amendment to protect the new homeowner.
Can I move amendment number 8?
Senator Huggins moved an amendment number 8, which would be XA.18. Is there objection? Hearing none, amendment number 8 is adopted.
The next amendment is XA.19, and on page 5, line 8, what we have done, we have removed small from Boat Harbor and inserted freshwater Boat Harbor. This is a reflection of the senator from the Mat Valley who wished to protect the lakes and rivers of that area while still allowing people in coastal areas who have a more legitimate coast need, they would still be able to utilize the power of eminent domain to perpetuate their boat harbors while protecting the primary recreational areas in the Mat Valley. This language seems to do that. I believe, without speaking for the two senators involved, that it does clarify that issue. And
I move amendment number 9.
Amendment number 9 has been moved by Senator Huggins. It's XA.19.
I'm going to just object for discussion purposes. I appreciate this movement. At least we're not doing any unintended consequences on coastal areas, which I'm worried about. We still may have a problem, and I'm not going to hold up the bill or the amendment, but I would like the sponsor to think about it. We could still have a problem in the interior on our riverways that are transportation ways for many communities. I understand the issue of Matsu, and I respect it, but we still don't have Boat Harbor defined anywhere. Still think this is just a place where we don't know where we're going with this restriction.
Yes, ma'am, I certainly appreciate that, but also, and if it helps any at all, if it's for transportation, it would not be, this bill would not protect for that. If it was something that was a transportation corridor, that would certainly be allowed. It's strictly recreation is kind of what we're talking here, so it's a little different, but I understand your concerns. And
I was trying to qualify those waterways. I wasn't saying the purpose. The issue is recreation isn't defined in the bill.
Yes, ma'am.
That is a problem.
Yeah.
But
Boat Harbor isn't defined in the bill. So all of a sudden you're restricting something. Boat Harbor is often used both for recreation and for business and for transportation. And we just, by having it in here and having recreation and small boat harbor not defined, we don't know what we're doing.
That is duly noted, yes, ma'am. Thank you.
And I think, and that is a problem. That is a problem, and that's one of them that I'm still continuing to work on, and I'll still work on probably between now and the time it gets to the next committee as well. But one of the things that I'm fairly comfortable with is when we talk about the harbor side of it. I don't know what the definition of a harbor is, but I will tell you that I'm fairly comfortable when I look at under on page 6 when we start talking about does not includes a path, trail, road, or site for which no reasonable alternative exists and which is necessary to preserve or establish public access to or along publicly owned land or water if the use of the path, trail, road, or site itself is for transportation or to facilitate use of. publicly owned land or water rather than primarily for recreation. Site has some broad applications. Could include a boat launch, could include a pier for temporary tie-ups, could a site used for to facilitate. I don't think the intent, and it's hard because there isn't a definition, but I don't think, it's not my intent, I don't think the intent of the bill would be to preclude boat launches or temporary tie-up areas or something, a dock or pier for overnight while people are utilizing the lake. I do have a problem, though, in if we say primarily for recreation and we haven't defined what recreation is. Mm-hmm. I do have a problem with that as well, but I'm going to continue to work on that.
Okay. I withdraw my objection.
Okay. So we have now before you number 9, which is XA.19. Is there a further objection? Hearing none, amendment number 9 is adopted.
On as a result of some additional of an amendment that we adopted and we may be addressing later, giving the power of eminent domain back to municipalities, XA20 is probably not a necessary amendment, although there is a place where we'll have to refer back to Section F at this point. And Peter, can you kind of walk through that? I don't want to throw you a curveball here, but as to why, as opposed to referencing back to 7.1-6, we need to include F.
The amendment was originally drawn when there was a subsection 7. It was a subsection D7, and that D7 was the legislative out, and that was added at some point. So, and it wasn't originally encompassed under the municipal power. So we made sure, or there's an amendment offered to adopt 7. But then, based on the discussions we had at the last hearing, rather than have a D7, there was an amendment offered to make the legislative out a separate section, a subsection F, and there's no longer a subsection D7, therefore. So we wouldn't need to change D1 through 6, that is accurate, but we would need to have an amendment that would adopt or reference the legislative out in what would be the new subsection F, which is an amendment I believe we still have to address today.
Let's just hold this amendment for a little while.
I think you have
it on your pending file.
It's in under a separate memo from council Don Bullock. You have amendment XA.21.
And the first part of this amendment, talking about from line 8 down to line through line 13, is a restatement of what we believe is true.
I'm sorry, not the line.
From line, let's say lines 10 and through 13. We have the F there, notwithstanding the limitations on the power of eminent domain in D and E of this section, the legislature may approve the exercise of eminent domain by law. And G, the power of eminent domain may only be delegated by statute. So it can't be conferred
right
by anyone within that has the power of eminent domain. For an example, DOT can't confer that power to any other organization or anything, but that power can only be delegated by statute.
And just for the purposes of discussion for a moment, Mr. Chairman,
does
that complement or augment or change in any way what we adopted as Amendment Number 5, which says that only the state may delegate the power of eminent domain?
Through the chair, Senator French, I think this would be offered in lieu of that other amendment. There was a problem with saying that only the state may delegate because state wasn't defined. State could be any entity of the state. It was very unclear what that meant. This is intended to make it more clear that the power of eminent domain may only be delegated by statute. If you say state, you're opening it up to any state entity that might have the power of eminent domain, could then go ahead and re-delegate, and I don't believe that to be the intent.
And so what we should discuss here is the possibility of rescinding amendments 4, 5, and 6, looking at this amendment.
I guess I'd like to understand this amendment before we rescind.
Yeah, I agree. We're not going to move it yet, amendments. But it basically incorporates the three amendments that we did in 4, 5, and 6.
That would be the simplification is third, yes, sir.
Now,
well, and in
discussing
one.
This, in discussing this,
I'm sorry,
there was several, you know, I want to lay it on the table that I've had since we did our first amendments to this bill. I got a lot of public input from people that say, okay, we don't mind giving municipalities the power to override on one hand, but when they come to taking trails and stuff across our land, we still want that to be reserved, to be overridden by state law rather than by municipal power.
I'm hearing the same thing.
So that's why I proposed it this way in response to that to discuss today. Have you been hearing the same thing? And I don't know.
No one's called me or emailed me.
I got rather inundated.
Yeah, no.
The only
no input pro or con.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if anyone's going to testify about that or if it's
through. What do you feel on it, Charlie?
Yeah, well, people are very sensitive to that in the respect that ever expanding, they don't have a problem with traditionally what is there and recognizing that on its merit. But the piece of taking this next encroachment factor for recreation, they're not supportive of.
They just want to, they want it just to be a little bit more difficult for that to happen, is what I'm hearing.
I actually think public thing at a local level can be a lot more difficult than trying to slip something through this process. So,
what do you think, Gene?
They might.
Any discussion?
Well, I have had, I know my staff has had some email exchanges here on that specific issue. Senator Guess might be right, though, that running the local gauntlet. But if you've got a suggestion on.
Basically, we just took that. We allowed this amendment would allow municipalities to exercise with a majority vote public hearing on transferring title to the property to another private person for economic development.
Is that the amendment that we took action on yesterday, David?
We did, day before yesterday. We gave them that power on trails and roads and on economic development. My public response has been, and we don't mind if you give it to local control on transferring title from one private person to another for economic development, but we want the state to have control, or the legislature to be the body that would consider it on trails or roads or recreational use within the 250-foot limit. That's what my response. And so I wanted to try to bring in here for the discussion. Senator French?
I guess I would be interested in hearing from those folks publicly, because the Kelo case, the case that sparked the national wave that prompted this bill, was an outrage that you could take my property and give it to someone else to build a hotel on.
Yeah.
Not that you could take a little sliver of my property to put a bike path through or access to a river or a path to a hunting ground. The Kelo case was about economic taking, and that was that's the prime mover behind this bill. And frankly, the recreational aspect is, I think, an afterthought. So it's surprising to me that the concern of people in the state is suddenly focused on recreational takings, which has not been a national issue, and which has frankly not even been a state issue, to my knowledge. That would suddenly supersede the prime rationale behind the bill.
I think that you're right. That was the concern in Connecticut. The concern in my district seems to to be a little different than the concern from Connecticut.
Mr. Chair, I mean, have we, one of the reasons that we discussed putting it in both sections, I thought, was because honestly, in some ways, we don't know what we're doing. We meet for 120 days a year, and we don't define recreation. So all of a sudden, everyone always went, you know, and since we took care of waterways, I mean, you know, and this doesn't happen in Anchorage, and maybe it doesn't happen in the rest of the state, but I guess what I'm worried about is people not having access to hunting, people not having access to other things that could be deemed recreation, and that someone will sue because we haven't defined recreation and say, no, this is for recreation, you can't do this, when it really is a public use. And so I was comfortable with the local option because we're not in all year round. We haven't defined recreation. And so we could really be putting some communities on things that we can't foresee into a quandary with no out. And I guess that's, and it all goes back to, you know, if you're a good shot or bad shot, is it recreation or subsistence and kind of those conversations. But I liked the out because local governments work all year round. And they're there to deal with problems all year round, and we set the bar very high, and we don't define recreation. And so I guess that was my comfort zone with the local issue.
Senator Huggins.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, my assumption is we are going to work on that definition. I think you've said that, which is a good point. The other one, though, is in my case, there's been a few people that have mentioned economic development, but by and large, it's been about 250, 1,000 feet, 1,500 is better. So the overwhelming concerns that I've heard have been recreational kinds of concerns, not Walmarts being built next to their cabin.
That's happened in my district.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, I think a lot of that, a lot of the response and the reason there's, and from this is from experience of working this through a lot of committees and probably hearing the same responses that from the same people or different people that you're getting, I think a lot of it gets wrapped around the home. And when you start talking specifically about a home, you wrap more emotions into it. So I don't think there's any less passion for a city taking for private to private. But when you start throwing the home in there, it becomes much more emotional and therefore driving the response. So it's not the recreational aspect as much as it is we say it's your home that they're taking. And that's going to drive a lot more comments than just the kind of the impersonal private-to-private definition. But when you get home, that's very personal. So I think that's probably why you're getting a larger response. I don't think you're going to have that many more people. I think taking is a taking in people's eyes. So I think that's the reason you're getting more on that particular issue.
I got an immediate emotional response on this one. And maybe it's because most of my people don't live in a downtown somewhere.
And so, without pointing it out, you are the chair, sir.
I know that.
But you're going to get those responses first.
Yeah. Senator French.
Perhaps procedurally, Mr. Chairman, the easiest thing to do is to divide this amendment, which I don't know if we've titled it yet, but it would look to be amendment number 10. I guess I would offer
it. Divide it.
I would offer it. I would object versus discussion, and then I would move to divide it at line 14 into two amendments, because I think one is fairly non-controversial, and the other one, I sense the committee is less unanimous on.
So you want to divide this sheet to a separate amendment, the first one being lines 1 through 15?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
If we look at document XA.21, is that a motion, Senator French? We're going to divide the question in amendment number
10.
Amendment number 10 will be the language that's on line 1 through 15 on page 1 of XA.21.
That's my motion, to divide the question.
Okay. Is there an objection to that motion?
So, Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry. So
So are we then dealing with 10A and 10B?
We'll just call it 10A. 1-4. Do that. 10A. Have that, Madam Clerk.
I actually have some questions on 10A.
And I'll move, I'll now move Amendment 10A.
10A has been moved. Senator Guest.
Two questions. Page 4, line 9, we delete the legislative ability. On 10A, line 5, refers to page 4, line 9, and deletes that line, which is the legislative approval of transferring. And can we just go over again why we did
which was
that?
Part of which previous amendment?
No, it's not a previous amendment, it's on the bill.
As it was put in the original draft, the legislative out applied to private transfers, but not did not apply to recreational transfers in subsection E. And by putting the what we're calling the legislative out in a new subsection F, that would allow the legislature to, on a case-by-case basis, allow the exercise of eminent domain for private-to-private or for recreational. Again, as it was originally drafted and left in D7, that would only apply to private-to-private, would essentially be an outright bar under any circumstances for eminent domain used in the context of a recreational take.
So as I look back at my past amendments, we've now deleted page 4, line 9 twice. We deleted it in amendment number 6.
We may have to, Senator French, we may have to withdraw a couple of amendments.
I think that this amendment, Mr. Chair,
no, because we don't have an app.
Would replace 1, 4, 5, and 6, the amendments that we were made previously. Well, 6 would be pending, I think, the subdivision.
That's right.
Well, for clarity, I took...
Senator French.
On Amendment 10A, I took lines 8 and through 13 to supersede, if you will, Amendment number 6. Is that not right?
I think it might.
Okay.
I think that's right. Let me verify that. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So
we're replacing we're replacing some amendments with amendments, basically.
Yeah.
With this amendment.
And basically, if this whole amendment passes, make changes to amendments 4, 5, and 6.
Okay.
Well, actually, then I need to slow down a little bit because. The amendment we adopted in amendment number 6, which I styled the Guess Amendment, was designed to make it more difficult, not less difficult, for us to pass a law to, for the legislature to pass a law to do an economic taking. And lines 10 through 12 of amendment 10A provide substantially, I think, make it easier for the legislature to pass a law.
The problem that we have, Senator French, is if we passed the bill as we looked at it with Senator Guest's restriction, it would apply only to the 24th legislature. The 25th legislature would not be constrained by that statute. That's the problem that we have, and we all kind of agreed with the concept that Senator Guest has put out there. But from a strictly legal standpoint, am I right there, Peter?
Yeah, that's correct. And we did review this clause, and we believe the amendment number 6 could raise a potential constitutional issue. And we thought rather than try and restrict the form of a bill that a future legislature might have to adopt in a bill of this that's going to receive this kind of scrutiny, we felt more comfortable using the language that we had originally adopted. Moreover, I believe the chairman is correct that this would only bind this legislature, and I think
the most binding effect that we could have on something like that would that provision would be in the uniform rules. And even then, they would be subject to change by the body. The problem is that the uniform rules on this trump the statute, as we've discussed in the past. And this is the uniform rules is what restricts us or constrains us on the use of title. So we, as you know, in order to expand title, change titles, and all those other things, we have to go through legislative resolutions to be able to suspend the uniform rules, not in the statutes. And that's where our problem lies here, is this is a matter for what we're trying to do. While we could put it in statute, it would merely fool the general public into believing that we had actually put a constraint on it, when the real constraint has to be in the uniform rules.
Or the Constitution.
Or the Constitution. So that's part of our problem. I agree wholeheartedly with the concept that Senator Guest laid out. I just don't know how we can craft it under a statute to make it effective.
And we didn't get a memo from legal on this?
No, that's... Okay. We can get that.
No, I can request that.
That's part of the problem. We're now dabbling over in the uniform rules and constitutional authority rather than statutory authority.
I mean, if we got this done, then we'd have an answer about binding future legislatures on other things.
Yeah. It's hard. I mean, we got into this discussion.
Excuse me.
Senator French and I have
to deal with this in August. Is that what you're
saying? Yeah, I think we're going to be dealing with the concept later on this year.
Senator French and I have had, and probably this committee will be involved if they're, you know, quite frankly. But Senator French and I had extensive discussions on the effect of statutes on other matters.
We did.
Okay.
So it has been more than extensively researched.
I guess I'll just say, since I'm the mover of Amendment 10A, that I would be more comfortable with the language we adopted in Amendment Number 6 on this subject. I recognize the arguments to the contrary, but I think if nothing more than a statutory expression of legislative intent, that Amendment Number 6 is certainly more potent from a citizen's perspective than is Amendment 10A. So,
well, I agree with the concept.
That's
the problem that I have is, more than likely, if we put that in this bill, the next committee will recognize the fact that we're treading in that same area of constitutional question. But on the record, I agree with the concept. I like the concept. I just don't know how we can do it within the structure that we are sworn to uphold. That's my problem.
Senator French, I think you've also given me another, hopefully, bullet in my ammunition to keep some intent language that's very strong in this bill with the Finance Committee. If we can point out the difficulty here and the desire of every committee as we go through, hopefully we can...
I don't know, is that...
I know you've been silent on this, Senator. I heard a moan.
We're going to drive the clerk nuts here. We better keep our conversations a little bit more constrained, but let's just say on the record that there's only one guy here that will make sure that we don't have extraneous material in the statute books. But let's put it... So the amendment is now on... 10A is before us. Is there a further objection?
I objected for the purpose of the discussion. I'm going to maintain my objection.
Thank you, Senator French. So call the roll, please.
Senator Guest?
No.
Senator
Terrio?
No. Hold it.
No.
Senator Huggins?
No.
Senator Seekins?
No.
I vote no on this amendment. Now, let's just go off the record for a moment. back on the record, the chair would move to rescind amendment number five. Is there objection? Hearing none. And then the chair would propose 10B, amendment 10B, which would read following section F, subsection F on page 4, insert new subsection G to read G. The power of eminent domain may only be delegated by statute.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman. I think you want that to read F.
F?
I think that. I mean,
is it F?
Yeah, we've just rescinded 15. F.
Right.
So we're going to replace F with new F.
New subsection F to replace the subsection F that was adopted on amendment number 5. Rescinded amendment number 5. To read, the power of eminent domain may only be delegated by statute. Is there objection? Hearing none.
Goes back to
10B is adopted.
Right. We've kept playing with him in 6 that addresses this.
Okay, let's take a look at. Next, the chair would move to rescind amendment number 4.
And I'm going to object.
Senator French has objected. Senator Cario?
And your intent would be?
10C, which would be on line 17 on page 1 through line 12 on page 2.
Page 6, line 19.
Okay, and what's the major difference?
Allows a municipality to have override power on private to private for economic reasons, but does not allow municipal override on the 250-foot rule, as I understand it.
Well, on anything recreational.
Yeah. On anything
recreational. But it takes a home within that parameter, yes, sir.
Point of order, it doesn't have to take the home, it just has to take
within the 250 feet. Within the 250 feet, yes, sir.
Yes, that's right. In the buffer area, 250 feet from the home. Okay, let's be careful we don't get the clerk confused here.
Okay.
Okay.
Hold on.
So that amendment number 4 to rescind amendment number 4. Call the roll.
Well, can
Senator
French?
No.
Senator Huggins?
Yes.
Senator Terrell?
Yes.
No.
Yes. Then the chair would propose amendment 10C, which would be to adopt the language on line 17, page 1 of XA.21 through line 12 on page 2, XA.21. Senator Terrio.
Mr. Chairman, I believe amendment 4, we had inserted the word public on sub 4?
On sub 4?
Or sub...
Yep, a public hearing.
Referencing hearing, that's correct.
And it is in there.
It is in there.
On page 2 of the amendment line.
Okay.
It is there in there, Senator Terrio. And you're right.
And do we need the same word up on line 2 of the... on sub 3? 90 days before a public hearing, or is that?
That's a hearing notice.
To be correct, it would be
mm-hmm.
inserted in there. Are you?
So, Mr. Chairman, I would move an amendment to Amendment 10C. And that would be on page 2, line 2, towards the end of that line, insert public in front of hearing.
Okay. Is there objection? Hearing none. Amendment to Amendment 10C is adopted. On the question of 10C, is there objection? Maintain your objection, no. Senator French?
I'll withdraw it.
Objection has been withdrawn. Is there further objection? 10C is adopted. Do we have any further amendments?
Only the one where I would like a title change to put something about oil and gas and PPT in this one, so that I might have a legitimate opportunity for a target finance.
It'll get tied up. It'll get tied up in finance for months if you do.
So maybe I would want to withdraw that.
Okay. Any further amendments to the bill?
We had a couple we set aside, Mr. Chairman.
Set aside, yes. Let's take a look at those. We set aside XA.20. Mr. Putzier.
Can't they just fix that SCS?
Well, these are simply renumbering. And do we want to just have an amendment to renumber per the amendments that have been appropriately based on the amendments to the bill?
Well, we have to, Mr. Chair, we have to put F in.
We had
20 is no longer valid because we took out 7, correct? We need to put F.
But we need to add F back there.
Yeah. This originally, there's no need for the amendment because there is not a 7, so that the amendment was offered to include a 7, but now we've adopted an F in lieu of the previous 7, so we can leave it 1 through 6. There's no need for the amendment any longer.
No need,
there is no 7 anymore, okay, based on the amendments that have been adopted today, so that, okay, therefore there's no need for the amendment.
And F will be added as just part of the statute, so we won't need to do this.
The other amendment, XA.16, dealt with personal versus privately owned. And if we take a look at personal residence, it means the structure of the dwelling place of an individual that must be used by the owner as a dwelling unit as opposed. It is it allows the owner to have a personal residence, which could under several circumstances here be owned by the owner, meaning the owner being it's not a private, personal, it could be owned by a subchapter S corporation, which is the owner. It could be owned by an LLC, which is the owner. It could be owned by a partnership, mm-hmm, who is the owner. So it gives a little broader interpretation to the ownership, in my opinion.
It's a dwelling unit, though, as opposed to...
Mr. Chair, the purpose of the amendment was to provide that?
No. Privately owned would have tightened it, and... I don't object to it being the way it is.
I don't see any reason for the amendment.
No reason for the amendment. I'm not going to put the amendment in. Is there any other amendments? Are there any other amendments to be brought to the committee today? Seeing none, is there any other further public testimony that's been indicated on this bill? Seeing none, closed public testimony. Amendments are done. You have before you this bill in its current amended form. And I guess the chair is asking if there's a will of the committee.
Mr. Chair, before we do that, I hope that Craig doesn't think we're rushing this bill through.
We could.
I was a little concerned about the lack of deliberation, actually.
I was going to say something about a clean CS, Mr. Chairman.
Well, I know, I'm willing to get a clean CS for us to take a look at before we...
We did a lot of...
Before we pass it on, and it won't delay anything in the next committee, Craig, if we do that, but...
I'm here to serve.
Let's just wait, we'll ask that we get a clean CS, and we'll take a look at this on Monday, or, yeah, Tuesday, I'm sorry, Tuesday, and get out. And I know that we will, we'll work with the next committee of referral as well.
And that is also my commitment, to, if you have anything, bring it forward, and we'll continue to work on it, we'll continue working on those.
But in discussing calendar with Senator Green, if we get it out today or if we get it out to Monday, it won't make any difference in that committee right at the moment.
I think you're probably right.
Or Tuesday, yeah. So, thank you, we'll set this bill aside. We'll take a short recess.
just taking a firearm.
We're back on the record, and we have Representative John Coghill with us this morning, and we have before us House Bill 400. Is that .400? Representative Coghill?
Caliber 400.
Caliber 400? Welcome, Judiciary Committee.
Good morning.
Go ahead and proceed.
Mr. Chairman, last time I was before you, there were some questions on what would happen, elected officials, what would happen for those who could be impeached, and what would happen in governmental positions. And so what we did, I had Mr. Guarnelli go see if we could draft up something that would use existing law for how we dispose of those who violate oaths of office. And because to me that rises to this level, and how we would deal with the questions at hand that you brought up in the committee. And I think what we did was we outlined some specifics, and what I'd probably do is defer to Mr. Guarnelli, since he's the one that was tasked to wander through the statutes and find out how to do this. I would defer to him to explain an amendment that we're going to agree to before your committee.
Welcome, Mr. Guarnelli.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Dean Guarnelli, Chief Assistant Attorney General with the Criminal Division of the Department of Law. As a result of the discussion during the last hearing on this bill, I went back and took a look at the various public officials who could potentially be subject to this provision, and tried to craft some mechanism for achieving the removal of office. During the discussions of this bill on the House side, and certainly in discussions with Representative Coghill's office and particularly Representative Grunberg's office, we always recognized that the precise mechanism for removing somebody from office was left a little vague in the bill. And I think there was some intention to do that, because it was always recognized that the primary people who would be subject to this were likely to be police officers who might, overzealously use their authority to confiscate firearms. And police officers have a variety of union protections and grievance arbitration proceedings that in collective bargaining that we didn't want to interfere with. So we left the precise mechanism for removing them, to be left to those agreements. And I think that, certainly there was a theoretical possibility that the governor, lieutenant governor, or, a mayor could be come under this provision, but I think we recognize that seemed unlikely, and so didn't provide any mechanism for that. But I think the questions that were raised the other day were good ones, and caused me to go back and reword the provision and try to take into account some of those other positions. So what is before you in the proposed amendment it basically says person who is convicted of these crimes for confiscating or attempting to confiscate or ordering confiscation of a firearm in these circumstances, and subsection 1 talks about appointed government positions, and this would be state troopers, police officers, people in those sorts of positions. I think the precise mechanism for removing them is left a little vague and is left to union agreements, but it does say if they're under the jurisdiction of Alaska Police Standards Council, they're also subject to revocation of their police officer certificate and can really never be a police officer anywhere else again. Subsections 2 and 3 directly address the questions that came up about, well, what about the governor? What about the lieutenant governor? Even what about legislators? And the discussions we had on the House side was, well, there may have to ultimately be a lawsuit to effectuate that. And so what this says is, it doesn't eliminate the possibility of a lawsuit, but it does say that if someone in that position is convicted of these offenses, they are subject to impeachment under Article 2, Section 20. That's a legislative impeachment process of the Constitution. So it provides that form of mechanism for what is in essence a public airing of the entire circumstances and a decision by the legislature if that person ought to be removed from office. With elected municipal officials, there's a question about that as well, and is this in some way going to disenfranchise the local voters who voted those people in? And subsection three says that, that references two existing statutes which talk about removal of elected municipal officials, 2921-70 and 2922-80, and those provisions provide a mechanism for doing that. And for example, under 2922-80, that involves mayors, municipal mayors, and what it says is that the local governing body, the rest of the city council, can by two-thirds vote remove a mayor for a variety of things, including a conviction for a crime involving your oath of office. And so what subsection C says, a conviction described in A of this section is an offense involving a violation of the oath of office for purposes of these existing statutes. Therefore, it provides a mechanism for the local governing body. I mean, the local citizens elected that person. They are the ones who might be subject to a order of confiscation of firearms. They're the ones who would be put in danger. They ought to have some role in deciding whether that person stays or goes. And so this uses the existing statutory mechanisms to accomplish that. And I think it in doing that, in providing some mechanism, it really avoids, I think, the necessity of actually somebody, some citizen, having to file a lawsuit to accomplish that. So I think from that sense, it's an improvement. It provides some more certainty, and I hope it's a little easier to read structured this way.
Yep. It was for me. Senator Guess.
Yes. Dean, are there public safety officers that don't fall under the Alaska Police Standards Council? I'm going back to the presentation yesterday with Commissioner Tandiski, and I thought I remembered him saying the troopers fall under the police standards, but VPSOs don't. Is that correct? It was in the context of something else. We weren't.
Yeah, through the chair. Village public safety officers fall under the authority of the Alaska State Troopers. Their certification falls under their authority, and it's a very kind of loose administrative approval process. So village public safety officers, I guess, present a problem. Village police officers, which are different, they're municipal police officers of small municipalities, do fall under the Alaska Police Standards Council, but village public safety officers, I guess, do not. And
well, they would just simply, they don't have a certification to lose.
They don't
still
have to
lose their position, but they wouldn't lose a certification.
Correct.
They could lose their position.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
It's the number one, they forfeit their position, and if they have a certification, it's subject to revocation.
Except, Mr. Chair, forfeits any appointed government position. I don't think that's an appointed position.
Yeah, you know,
it is.
Mr. Chairman, it
is.
I'm
appointed or hired.
They are hired. They are actually employees of nonprofit corporations.
That's true.
The funding for them comes through the state, and I'm certain that, you know, public safety would take immediate action if that occurred. And you know, really, I mean, as a practical matter, I know the VPSO program fairly well, and they don't do much of anything of significance without checking with what's called an oversight trooper. It's someone who has responsibility for VPSOs,
yep,
in a variety of villages.
Yep.
I can't imagine that happening in a village without the troopers being directly involved. But that is, Senator Guess is right, that is a small gap in this. They would still be subject to being charged with the offenses, but this would not specifically cover them.
Mr. Chair?
Senator, yes.
Then may I ask, on page 1, line 14, would they get that exemption? So if a VPSO is working, is directed by a trooper, I mean, I know we're getting nuances here, but I just, is that going to be a problem that they don't? I'm a VPSO, a trooper says, no, we've got a disaster, you have to go and do this, that, or the other. They do that. Would they fall under this? Is the intent that they would fall under this?
Mr. Chairman, the intent is certainly that they would not fall under that exemption.
Okay.
Although they may be hired by a nonprofit corporation, they are, by statute in Alaska law, peace officers, And so they do have the powers of peace officers, and so would not be considered acting as a private citizen. I mean, they have peace officer authority, they just are this small exemption from the Police Standards Council.
And just for intent purposes, I would speak to that too. When we said private citizen, we meant those outside of any authority that would have a right to make an order. And so if there was some authority conferred on a VPSO through the state troopers, I think they would still be responsible through the state troopers. That would be my intent.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions? Chair would entertain a motion on the amendment. Senator Theriault?
Mr. Chairman, I would move as amendment number 1, X.1.
Is there objection? Hearing none, X.1, amendment number 1 is adopted. Further discussion on the bill? We have no one for public testimony. Will of the committee on the bill?
Mr. Chairman, I just have one question. And maybe it was discussed before, but there's a clear line or distinction between confiscation and a taking. I'm just wondering if in an emergency situation, I break out the back window of my neighbor's pickup to get a gun because I need it in a situation. That's not a confiscation. I mean, that might be illegal that I broke out its window, but would that be considered a confiscation?
Wouldn't be interfering with his constitutional rights.
Through the chair, Senator Theriault, I think certainly in the other committees there was some discussion of, you know, what confiscation is and what circumstances it would apply to, and would it, for example, allow police officers to go into a, you know, if they needed a firearm to, you know, protect the citizenry, to go into a gun store or a Walmart and grab their firearms and use them. And I think everyone recognized that that in order to protect the public, taking a gun for that purpose is not a confiscation. I mean, it's to protect the public, and it's not to deny someone their own protection. So I hope that answers the question.
Thank you.
Senator Gass.
Okay, just so I understand, but if a police officer believes that someone is going to harm someone else, they have the right to confiscate a weapon. Yes or no under this? Where's that line of, I think he's going to hurt her, and as a police officer, I have a duty to protect someone, and me just going up and saying, we're in a disaster, give me your gun.
Through the chair, Senator Guest, this bill is not intended to remove any of the authority of law enforcement officers to take action when they believe it is appropriate. And certainly, defending somebody, I mean, defending themselves, defending a third person, making arrests, stopping criminal activity, you know, ongoing criminal activity or suspected criminal activity is what police officers do, and that still remains. That these crimes that involve, you know, intentional interference with constitutional rights, official misconduct is doing something that you know you don't have a right to do, but you go ahead and do it anyway with the intent to injure somebody or benefit yourself. So, I mean, I think it's fairly clear in referencing those crimes that we're dealing with, you know, something well beyond the authority of any, you know, legitimate law enforcement officer.
Representative Coghill.
I just think that under the Emergency Powers Act, you really don't suspend the right of the police officers to keep the peace or to enforce the law. So okay. I think within the whole scope of law, we still have very good protections. This was intended under the Emergency Powers Act to just limit, among the four other things, adding the fifth, that you just can't confiscate legally owned, possessed, or carried firearms. I think if somebody's a bad actor, and there's a suspicion worthy of that a police officer has a reasonable belief that there's going to be a problem, then they're well within their right now as they would be then.
Okay. Thank you.
Other questions? What will the committee on the bill?
Chairman, I move CS for House Bill 400 as amended with individual comments. Zero physical note be moved.
Senator Huggins has moved the bill. Mm-hmm. Is there objection? Seeing this, the bill moved on to the next committee of referral. Thank you, Representative Coghill,
Mr. Chairman.
Pinelli, and we'll take a short recess. We're back on the record. Next before us is House Bill 272, and we have been provided with a draft or a blank CS for consideration this morning, and so we'd like to step through the changes in the CS, and if you'll put yourself on the record, we're eager to hear the explanation.
Mr. Chairman, Michael O'Hare, staff to Representative Pete Cott. Good morning. Before you is CS for House Bill 272, version L is in Lima. There is also before you a draft concurrent resolution for title change, Mr. Chairman. If it please the Chairman, I will go over the changes to the CS. First change, page 2, line 8, allows for a maximum fee or rake a license owner may collect from players to be up to $4 per game. Page 2, line 13, adds that a municipality may regulate the hours of operation and other matters relating to card rooms within the municipality. Page 2, starting at line 28, on to page 3, ending up page 3, line 4, adds that licensed owner shall obtain a signed self-determined preset loss limit from the player before selling tokens or chips. Next change is page 8, line 23. An owner's license may not be transferred, sold, or purchased. It's a non-transferable license. There was a question by the chairman last week regarding whether the license was transferable, and I was mistakenly informed the committee that it was non-transferable. The CS fixes that. Next change is page 9, line 9. Starting on line 9, with regards to the owner's licenses, it allows for licenses to be issued for card room operations in a municipality that has a municipal police department if that municipality has adopted the ordinance ratified by at least 60% supermajority of the voters voting to authorize card rooms and card games in that municipality. That section also, includes a population change. If the population of the municipality is less than 50,000 people, only one owner's license may be issued. If the population is 50,000 or more, the total number of owner's licenses issued may not exceed that divided by 50,000. Page 11, line 7, subsection B, added as a factor to consider in granting an owner's license, the department shall make the application for an owner's license available for public view and inspection and copying, and shall invite the public comment on an application and consider all comments received in determining whether to grant the owner's license. And then last one, page 11, line 11, subsection C, added that if a situation arose where there are more applicants than there are permits, available in that particular municipality. Some of the factors in choosing among the applications, the department will consider the recommendations of that city or city council members in making that determination as to whether it's good for the community, good for the card players, or any input from the city council. And those are all of the changes in this CS, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. So / Lima has been has the following changes in it. Chair would entertain a motion to consider / Lima as our working document.
So moved.
Motion has been made to adopt / Lima as our working document. Is there objection? Seeing none, it is our working document. We'll address the title resolution later. Mr. Hare, you have provided some answers to questions. Perhaps we could just review through those.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. There were some questions from the committee to the sponsor with regards to last week's committee meeting. One of the questions Senator Guess was a Kinnaman minority shareholder of the establishment be a felon? And the answer to that is yes. In the current bill, the license is tied to one individual, one corporation, and one group. As it's currently read, the bill requires the license to provide the names of any shareholders with a 20% interest or greater. And there's a there's an express prohibition to the to one individual that is issued the license. If it's a will of the committee to amend that, it was actually the intention of the sponsor in the CS to amend that to be no owners, shareholders at all, be a felon. It was missed by legal, and we'd be certainly willing to entertain that amendment. Next question is, are there limits of profitability, the rake or the cut in the bill? And the new CS has changed that. The old CS had the limits to be determined by the Department under Regulation Authority. And next question by the chairman and co-chair was, why was the provision of the municipal vote to establish or renew a card room license removed to the House floor last year? In review of the minutes and asking several members, it was indeterminate, didn't recall. We've changed that in the current CS to include a supermajority vote to allow it. Hopefully that will help with some concerns. Next question, is the license non-transferable? I really have answered that. Sorry for the miscommunication, Mr. Chairman. Based upon, next question, based upon the fact that there is a cash intense business, are there provisions and enforcement regulations in the bill to monitor and enforce activities, i.e. daily tally sheets, closed circuit TV, et cetera, by Senator French? And there is no regulation, there's no provisions in the statute in the bill to do that. Next question, what would be the effective dates in order to get revenue up to speed? There are currently no effective dates. It would be 90 days after the bill is signed into law. Let's see, and are there provisions in the bill regarding hours of operation, rakes, and would be handled through regulation? The answers regarding cash handling enforcement would be regulation, would be handled through regulation. And in the current CS, the municipality will also have authority into determining the hours of operation if it's so voted into the community. And how are cheats or cheating defined? Cheating is defined in the bill under the definition section. We can, based upon the rules of the games, but they are defined. I believe it's, let's see, page 18. Page 18.
Thank you.
You
I
bet.
Missed that.
Mm-hmm. And are there provisions for other forms of gaming, i.e. pull tabs or bingo? And there are no provisions currently for prohibiting any other forms of games and gaming. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. O'Hare. Other questions for Mr. O'Hare? Okay, let's go. We've got some folks that want to testify, so we'll get through them. Let's start out. Got here in. Let's take first in the off nets. Let's get that out of the way. We have Edward James. Mr. James, are you online with us still this morning? Mr. James, are you there?
Hello.
Hello.
Yes. Hello.
Welcome, Mr. James. If you'll introduce yourself to the committee, we're eager to hear your testimony this morning.
Sure, thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the Judiciary Committee. My name is Edward James.
Thank you very much, Mr. James. Are there questions for Mr. James? Seeing none, let's move to the hearing in Juneau. We have Dan Stickle. Mr. Stickle, welcome to the Judiciary Committee, sir. And if you'll introduce yourself to the committee, we're eager to hear your testimony this morning.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Dan Stickle, for the record. I'm an economist with the Department of Revenue, and I am available to answer questions on our fiscal note. I also believe on the line we have our deputy director from Anchorage, Mr. Larry Myers.
Okay. We will hold you in reserve then, Mr. Stickle. Appreciate your being here to help us answer questions this morning. Do we have any questions for Mr. Stickle at this point? Seeing none, let's move on then to Robert Hall. Mr. Hall, welcome to Judiciary Committee. And if you'll introduce yourself to the folks, we're eager to hear your testimony this morning.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, members of the committee. My name is Robert Hall. I'm from Houston, Alaska, and I'm the Vice President of the Houston Chamber of Commerce. And we'd like to thank the sponsor and the committee for having this bill again for the changes that they've made. Some of them were at the suggestion of the City of Houston, and the three that they made that we'd like to just point out that we really appreciate is the first, the local input. The city particularly requested the ability to limit the hours so we didn't have 24-hour card games in our town. We like the idea very strongly that the state will consider the input of the city council who gets the permit, that we just don't get someone handed to us from maybe even outside the state, that it's someone that's going to be in the best interest of the city, that's going to be an honorable contributing member to the community. And having the local input into that process is very important. We appreciate the idea of loss limits. By the way, that's unique. I don't know any other state in the nation that says, well, the player buys chips. You know, the problem with, one of the problems with problem gaming is people think I'm going to limit myself to $20 or $50 or $100, and they get all going and crazy, and then they lose more than they wanted to. And once you set a loss limit, that's it. You know, it can be for day, week, month, whatever, and you they can't sell any more chips. That's it. And so it's a way to help a player control the 2 to 4% of the population that may have a problem. They will be limited. And all of us who play poker enjoy playing poker. We don't want to play poker with someone who can't afford to lose. And this would limit that type of person from going crazy. And it would leave it to just a friendly type of a situation. And the city really likes the idea of the 60% supermajority. For those of you that feel this is a change in the culture of your community, that this wouldn't be the state changing it. It would allow, still leave a local option. If Whittier or Anchorage or Cordova or Banana or Houston wants to have a card game, they can. And if they don't, they won't. And it requires 60%, which is pretty high. And that would require the will of the community to be represented. There are thousands and thousands of players who like to play poker in Alaska. Most of them would like to play the last 10 years, the big thing is poker tournaments. You're allowed to play, have a card game in your kitchen, but you can't have a tournament. Tournament requires 20, 30, 40 tables and lots of players coming from all over. You see them on TV. The only way you could do it is perhaps go on the internet, and all that money would go out of country, and those are in Canada, and they're not, the websites aren't based in the United States, so this would allow us to participate in poker tournaments, which have a set entry fee. And I look at it as a respect for individual rights and responsibility and the freedom of individual choice. I might mention sometimes, I've talked to several of the members of this committee, and there's some hesitancy in changing the system that's been set up in Alaska for a while, and you have an alternative. Sometimes the legislature chooses to ask the voters, and an alternative choice for you would be to put it on the ballot in November and let the voters express their will to you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Hall? Seeing none at the moment. Thank you, Mr. Hall. Link Fannin. Mr. Fannin, welcome to the Judiciary Committee. And if you'll introduce yourself to the folks, we'll hear your testimony this morning.
My name is Link Fannin. I appreciate the opportunity of being here today with the City of Houston, a city councilman. And I kind of wanted to thank Representative Cott's office for some of the changes that they've made. The three in particular that were already mentioned were in a resolution that the City of Houston passed asking for local control, asking for the supermajority vote, asking for the stop loss limits, and so forth. And originally when this bill came out, the city wasn't in favor of a lot of the things in here, wasn't in favor of the bill in general. And when that resolution was passed, they were gracious in making those changes. I won't belabor some of the issues that Mr. Hall just spoke about, but I just wanted to touch on a few things. The idea of having a supermajority vote, I think, is critical in this bill. For anybody that thinks gambling is going to be forced on a community by somebody in a community that doesn't want gambling in there, we don't require a supermajority. Well, for most things, in fact, the City of Houston doesn't require a supermajority vote for anything. To raise taxes, to change, zoning or any of our laws. So that's a fairly high standard. There's obviously some economic benefit. That's why, the City of Houston has taken an interest in the bill. But beyond the economic benefit that could come to the city, this is an activity that's going on, and you're not going to stop it. It's going on the internet. That money is going out of the country. It's going on in back rooms. It's going on in bars after hours, and it's exploded. And frankly, there's no consumer protection there. So aside from our personal interest, the idea that the industry is saying, hey, this has gotten big and we need some type of regulation, some type of consumer protection, I think is kind of important. I mean, how many industries say, come regulate us? We're asking for regulation. Again, this is something that's already legal. What's not legal is the regulation of it, essentially. So I appreciate the amendments that it made. The City of Houston has been pretty solidly behind this, especially with amendments, and I appreciate your guys' time this morning. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Fannin? Seeing none, thank you. Ruth Blanchard. Ruth, welcome to the Judiciary Committee this morning. And if you'll introduce yourself to the committee members, we're also eager to hear your testimony.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, members of the committee. I'm Ruth Blanchard. I represent the City Council of Houston. I came to thank you for the changes in the the House bill. I think some are important changes, and the city of Houston supports them. I also think the supermajority is the very important one that is, that will help pass this. Voters have to approve a card room before they become legal in the cities. We appreciate the amendments for local control. This will allow the city council to have input as to who is awarded the permit. I also appreciate the addition to the individual loss limits. That, I think, is one of the most important things, changes in the bill. Poker is very popular, and this is a safe way for people to enjoy the responsibility, enjoy it responsibly. Thank you very much.
Any questions for Ms. Blanchard? Seeing none, thank you very much, ma'am, for being here this morning. Rosemary Burnett. Welcome, Rosemary. And if you'll introduce yourself for the record, we're also eager to hear your testimony this morning.
Good morning, Honorable Chairman and Committee. My name is Rosemary Burnett, Deputy Mayor of Houston, Alaska. I'm here to represent the City of Houston to let you know we support the House Bill of 272, authorizing public card games. The city recognizes an individual's rights and responsibility. That is why we think if you support us on this bill, it should require a vote of the people by 60%, which Houston requires that vote anyway. I also believe card rooms will help in controlling illegal gambling, such as internet gambling. We lose thousands over the internet, and it goes out of the country. And the after-hours gambling is very high. It started in Anchorage, and I'm sure if you check the records, you'd find there's been a lot of illegal houses busted over the years, and it's just now moving out to the valley. And I think very strongly that we need control of the cards. And if you will check into it, they're doing all of their Texas Hold'em tournaments, and it's creating more and more after-hours illegal gambling. And I really do think that we need more control. And if we do this, we will get control of all the gambling. And if we can control how much each one loses. And I would like to thank you for the changes in the bill, most of all. And I'd like to thank most of all for your listening. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Rosemary? Seeing none. Melissa Parker. Good morning, Melissa. Welcome to the Judiciary Committee.
Good morning.
If you'll introduce yourself to the members, we'll also be eager to hear your testimony this morning.
My name is Melissa Parker. I represent the Alaska Poker Association. We are over 400 members strong of poker players, 200 of which are in the Mat-Su Valley. I'm a longtime Alaskan. My husband works for Alaska Railroad. The Alaska Poker Association puts on free tournaments for Alaskans, not in a bar setting, but we've done it from Fairbanks to Anchorage. We've been asked by several charitable organizations to put on fundraiser tournaments for them, which is illegal in the state of Alaska. From church groups to police balls or whatever. We did put on the most successful Furlande event this year with over 7,500 participants during a 6-week period leading up to the Furlande Tournament of Champions. Our group supports legalizing poker. We feel that Alaska needs to cash in on the poker boom. It has not peaked. We want Alaskans to stay in Alaska and spend their money in Alaska. I find a lot of our players are going out of state to play in big tournaments, and that they also play online. Our tournaments is a training ground for these people to go play in bigger tournaments. And I think if we legalized it here, that it would be good for Alaska and keep our residents here. People from the slope on their 2 weeks off go to California to play in tournaments or Washington State or to play in the World Series of Poker or the World Poker Tour. And thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Parker? Senator Terrio.
Do you have any reason to believe that with the limits that have been put on the activity with the bill, the loss limits, things of that nature, the people won't still go out of state where those things don't exist, play online or play in back rooms? You know, I guess I don't see this as really, if we put any kind of either local limitation power or limitations in the bill, that people won't still go to other means.
I don't think it will prevent internet gaming, but I think it will keep Alaskans in Alaska a lot more than traveling outside to go to these. If we have events that are scheduled here, I think they will stay here.
Thank you.
So,
Senator Guest?
So people who are currently illegal gambling are still going to do that, but people that are legally gambling and leaving outside will stay here?
No, I wouldn't say that. I mean, I don't know. I have no idea if you can stop all the backroom games. Okay. I'd like to see it stopped, but I don't know for sure if it could be stopped. I mean,
okay. Thank you.
Senator Huggins?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Melissa, loss limits. What would be a parameter of loss limits that come to mind that would be reasonable in your mind as the head of the association?
It's my understanding that the bill is self-imposed loss limits, so I think it would be a decision.
Self-imposed, so an individual chooses what they can afford to lose.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think everyone would decide how much they were able.
So based on the colleagues that you have that play poker, what round number do you think that would?
Well, I think it varies person to person. Somebody who can afford to lose $200 a month, or somebody that can afford to play.
You ever thought about your loss limit?
My loss limit? I'm a winning player, so but I wasn't always.
You're a winning player.
I am a winning player, but I wasn't always. So it's poker is
so
a game.
If you're a winning player, you don't have to have a loss limit.
No, absolutely not. Okay. It's over a long-term period, so absolutely, and that's something I've learned over the years to set my own loss limits.
Right. Thank you.
Okay. Other questions for Ms. Parker? Senator Huggins, go ahead.
Well, I just had a comment. Thank you. Not for Melissa particularly. I appreciate Melissa coming today. But, you know, there's four of these people here are neighbors of mine and good people. And Bob Hall back there is Mr. Gorilla Fireworks. It doesn't mm-hmm. recognize him by name. And but, you know, I would like to say most of us have probably driven through the city of Houston. Most of us probably hadn't stopped in the city of Houston. But, you know, there's some pretty dynamic things happen there, and the faces we see here today are reflective of that in the respect that not many towns have the leadership show up for any kind of thing here, and I'd just like to say thanks to each of those. We may not agree on some of the issues some of the time, but I'm very admirable of the people and the dynamics that they represent.
Thank you, Mr. Huggins. Now, Melissa, I just have one or two questions. Just
sure.
I know a little bit you've introduced yourself to me and your background. If we had based on what you've heard here this morning, if we had a card room, would you anticipate that there would also be, in that card room, there'd be bingo, there'd be pull tabs, every other form of legal gambling would probably gather there as well, as far as the what we call charitable or nonprofit gaming?
I would think that would be up to the municipality, but probably it would be an all-in-one location. Make it.
And you know, I know you came from Las Vegas at one time. Would you anticipate, from your viewpoint, a card room? Would you think it would be standing alone, or would it be in conjunction with other development in your mind?
I would probably say it would be in conjunction with other development, hotels and restaurants.
Okay. And what's your impression for an example, the amount of cash that's necessary for someone to open a card room?
From reading the bill, it seems very expensive. The $500,000 bond and the $10,000 per table annually, and the $25,000 non-refundable application fee. It would seem that somebody would have to be wealthy in order to start a card room.
Thank you very much. Thanks for being. Any other questions for Melissa while she's here? Seeing none. Thank you very much for coming today. Is there anyone else that wants to testify on this bill in the audience in Juneau? Is there anyone else online? Hearing none, we'll close public testimony on the bill. We do have before us Senate House Bill Number 272/Lima. And comments on any of the members of the bill, discussion among the members on the bill? Seeing none, is there a will of the committee on the bill? The bill will be held in committee. Thank you very much. Let's take a look at our next schedule. Don't have one for next week yet. We will meet on Tuesday.
Someone's slacking.
We'll have a schedule out to everyone by 5 o'clock today. And with that, Judiciary Committee is adjourned for the day.